Chapter 46. Dirk surfaced 20 yards from the burning gasoline and lazily swam in the direction of the cruise ship, occasionally raising one arm and slapping it down to the surface in the diver's signal for distress. He cautiously eyed the carbon dioxide cloud, which was still burgeoning a few dozen yards behind the burning log. He could hear shouts from the shore and glanced over to see Summer yelling and waving at the ship to halt. He looked north to see the massive ship still bearing down on him. He began to wonder if anyone was awake on the bridge and had even seen his pyrotechnic display. Questioning his own safety in the path of the ship, he turned and swam a few strokes toward the shore. Then he heard the distant wail of an alarm sounding on board. The water near the vessel's stern caught his eye as it churned into a turbulent boil. Dirk realized the fiery signal had in fact been seen and that the captain had reversed engines. But he began to wonder if it was too late. The Dauphine continued gliding toward the toxic cloud without any appearance of slowing. Dirk swam harder to avoid the oncoming bow of the ship as it bore down on him. Its towering presence drew over him, the bow cutting the water just yards away. All but giving up hope that the ship would stop, he suddenly detected the liner shudder and falter. The ship's bow eased up to the dying line of flames, then ground to a halt. With a pained slowness, the Dauphine began backing up the strait, moving 100 yards to the north before drifting to a stationary position. A small orange launch had already been lowered over the side and quickly raced toward Dirk. As it pulled alongside, two crewmen reached over and roughly yanked him aboard. An austere-faced man seated at the stern growled at him.
"What kind of fool are you?"
"Greenpeace," he asked in a French accent. Dirk pointed to the billowing white vapor to the south of them. "Sail into that and you'll be a dead man. You be the fool and ignore my warning." He paused, staring the crewman in the eye. Flustered and suddenly unsure of himself, the Frenchman remained quiet. "I have an injured man ashore who requires immediate medical attention," Dirk continued, pointing to the fishing hut. Without another word, they raced the launch to shore. Dirk jumped off the boat and ran to the hut, which was now blazing hot from the stove fire. Summer was seated with her arm around Trevor, talking to him on the cot. His eyes looked brighter, but he still mumbled in a state of grogginess. The launch crewman helped carry him to the boat, and they all returned to the Dauphine. After Trevor was hoisted aboard in the launch, Summer accompanied him to the ship's medical station while Dirk was escorted to the bridge. The ship's captain, a short man with thinning hair, looked him up and down with an air of disdain.
"Who are you, and why did you set fire in our path?" he asked pointedly.
"My name is Pitt, from the National Underwater and Marine Agency. You can't proceed down the strait or you'll kill everyone aboard. That white mist ahead of you is a lethal cloud of carbon dioxide gas being discharged by a tanker ship. We had to abandon our boat and swim to shore, and my sister and another man barely escaped death." The executive officer stood nearby, listening. He shook his head and snickered.
"What an absurd tale," he said to another crewman loud enough for Dirk to hear.
Dirk ignored him, standing toe-to-toe with the captain.
"What I have said is true. If you want to risk killing the thousands of passengers aboard, then go right ahead. Just put us ashore before you proceed."
The captain studied Dirk's face, searching for signs of lunacy, but finding only stone-cold reserve. A crewman at the radar station broke the tension.
"Sir, we are showing a stationary vessel in the fog bank, approximately 1/2 mile off our starboard bow."
The captain digested the information without comment, then looked again at Dirk.
"Very well. We shall alter course and avoid farther progress through the strait. Incidentally, the Coast Guard is on their way. If you are mistaken, Mr. Pitt, then you will be subject to their prosecution."
A minute later, a thumping noise approached and an orange and white U.S. Coast Guard helicopter from Prince Rupert appeared out the port window. "Captain, if you would, please advise the pilot to avoid flying into or above the white cloud. It might prove enlightening if he also did a flyby around the northwest coast of Gill Island," Dirk requested. The captain obliged, advising the Coast Guard pilot of the situation. The helicopter disappeared for 20 minutes, then reappeared above the cruise ship and called on the radio.
"Dauphine, we have confirmed the presence of an LNG tanker at a floating terminal on the north coast of Gill Island. It appears you may be correct about an unlawful discharge of gas. We are issuing marine hazard warnings through the Canadian Coast Guard and Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Advise you to alter course to the channel west of Gill Island. The captain thanked the Coast Guard pilot, then configured an alternate route around Gill Island. A few minutes later, he approached Dirk.
It would seem that you have saved my ship from an immeasurable tragedy, Mr. Pitt. I apologize for our skepticism, and thank you for the warning. If there is anything at all I can do to repay you, please let me know.
Dirk thought for a minute, then said, Well, Captain, at some point, I would like to have my boat back. Dirk and Summer had little choice but to remain aboard the Dauphine until she docked in Vancouver late the following evening. Trevor was back on his feet by the time they reached port, but was sent to the hospital for overnight observation. Dirk and Summer stopped for a visit before catching a train to Seattle.
Are you finally thawed out?
Summer asked, finding Trevor under a mountain of blankets in the hospital room.
Yes, and now they're trying to cook me alive, he replied, happy to see her so soon.
Next time, I get the dry suit.
Deal, she said with a laugh.
Have they nailed the LNG tanker? He asked, turning serious.
The Dauphine saw her headed to sea as we skirted around Gill Island, so they must have cut and run once they saw the helicopter. Fortunately, the Coast Guard chopper had their video camera rolling, and so captured them at the floating terminal.
No doubt they'll be able to trace the ship back to one of Goyette's holdings, Dirk added, though he'll find a way to pawn off the blame.
That's what killed my brother, Trevor said solemnly. They almost got us, too.
Did Summer tell you that she deciphered your brother's message on the Ventura? Dirk said.
No, he said, suddenly sitting up in bed and staring at Summer. I've been thinking about it ever since we found the Ventura, she said. It came to me on the ship last night. His message wasn't that they choked. It was that they suffered from choke damp.
I'm not familiar with the term, Trevor said.
It comes from the old mining days, when underground miners carried canaries with them to warn of asphyxiation. I had run across the term while investigating an old flooded quarry in Ohio that was rumored to contain pre-Columbian artifacts. Your brother was a doctor, so he would have been familiar with it. I believe he tried to write the message as a warning to others.
Have you told anyone else? Trevor asked.
No, Summer replied. I figured you'll want to have another chat with the chief of police in Kitimat when you return.
Trevor nodded but turned away from Summer with a faraway look in his eyes. We've got a train to catch, Dirk said, eyeing the clock.
Let's try a warm water dive together real soon, he said to Trevor, shaking his hand.
Summer moved in and gave him a passionate kiss.
Now remember, Seattle is only 100 miles away.
Yes, Trevor smiled. And there's no telling how long I'll have to stay in Vancouver arranging a new boat. He'll probably be behind the wheel before we see ours again, Dirk lamented as they walked out. But he would be proven wrong. 2 days after returning to the NUMA regional office in Seattle, a flatbed truck showed up carrying their research boat left behind off Gill Island. It had a full tank of gas, and on the pilot's seat was an expensive bottle of French Burgundy.